Hello and welcome back to The Moments That Made Me. Before we kick off with this week's incredible episode, I just wanted to let you all know that my first book, Manifest, 7 Steps to Living Your Best Life, is available to pre-order now. I am beyond excited and proud and just over the moon, and I cannot wait for you guys to get your hands on it. It will be released on the 6th of January 2022. And it will teach you absolutely everything you need to know to manifest literally anything that you want into your life. It is a self-development book, a self-help book, an empowerment book, and of course, a guide to manifesting. So you can pre-order from Amazon or Waterstones or Audible from now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to The Moments That Made Me with me, your host, Roxy Nafusi. Today I am joined by the absolutely incredible Ruth Ann. Ruth is a Grammy-nominated Irish singer-songwriter. Ruth's written and co-written for the likes of Britney Spears, Bebe Rexha, One Direction's JoJo, and Martin Garrix, to name just a few. And she is now a successful solo artist since debuting her first single back in 2018. I am so excited to be sitting down and hearing her 3 defining moments that got her to where she is today. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me.
How are you?
I'm good.
Where are you?
I'm in London.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm Irish, but I live in Southeast London. So yeah, I'm here.
So you are currently expecting the birth of your first child, right?
Yes, I'm actually sitting doing this in her, what's going to be her nursery. So I am very excited. Not long to go. I'm in my 3rd trimester, so...
How are you feeling?
I feel good. Yeah, I'm getting heavier. I'm getting quite heavy, and singing is getting harder because of the breathing and everything. But I'm feeling good, and I'm actually just really excited. Yeah, I'm very excited.
Oh, I feel like it's so special to have you on this, like, magical stage.
Yeah.
So let's dive straight in with your first defining moment.
My first defining moment that got me where I am today is definitely my dad when I was 17. I had been like at home producing on these like little loop beats and making songs at home in my bedroom. And my dad entered one of them into this songwriting competition, which was like the biggest deal in Ireland at the time. It was like for under 20s, and it was a songwriting competition, and the winner received like 10,000 euro worth of Yamaha equipment, got press. It was on the biggest radio station. The song got played, and my dad, without me knowing, submitted one of my demos, which was me and my girl band at the time, and singing a song that I'd written and produced called Battleground. And we got to perform it. We got down to the top 10, and then we got to perform it live in one of the big venues there. And then I won. So because of winning that, so it was like right after the day after my Leaving Cert, after I'd won that and I got the Yamaha equipment, and I got a lot of press attention in Ireland for kind of being 17 and winning this competition. And then a manager found me through that, and he was managing Mark and Danny from The Script at the time, who weren't The Script yet. They were in LA being writers and producers. And he kind of started getting to know me and my family and was like, I want to manage you. I want to take you to LA. I've got an office in LA. And so my parents said I had to sit my exams, my final exams, because they wanted me to have my education to fall back on in case. And then the day after my leaving cert exams, which is kind of the equivalent of like the A levels or the GCSEs, the day after I sat my final one, I was flown to LA. And that led to 3 days later, me meeting Billy Steinberg and Josh Alexander. And I co-wrote Too Little Too Late on that first trip 3 days in. So that kind of was quite a defining moment. Yeah, to get me to that place. Yeah.
It happened so fast.
Yeah.
How did you even process it at the time, what was happening? Or were you just kind of in this like roller coaster, just like, what?
Yeah, I was like 17. I had never been to America before. I wasn't really ever away from my parents. And I was traveling with this manager and his family. So my mum and dad had gotten to know his family over the months before. So they felt safe. But it was like everything at once. It was like going to Hollywood and having never stepped foot in America before. And being hit with this completely different culture than Irish culture. And then being put into the rooms with Billy Steinberg. Is like a huge, huge Grammy, multiple Grammy winner. He wrote True Colors. He wrote Like a Virgin. He wrote some of the biggest classics ever. So to kind of be in a room with him. But I feel like because I was 17, I hadn't got any fear. I hadn't been, quote unquote, like damaged yet or anything. So I was like, I was quite like fearless in a way. And I sat and played a song for him. And he was like, yeah, come write with me and my buddy, you know, me and my buddy Josh tomorrow. And then when I walked in and we did Too Little Too Late, we actually wrote two songs over 2 days. And I just remember singing the demo thinking, oh God, this sounds like JoJo. In my head, I was like, I didn't say it to them because we were writing for me as an artist at the time. But I was like, oh, this really sounds like a JoJo song in my head. And 2 years later, I got a call saying, hey, you know that song we did, JoJo wants to record it. And I immediately, without hesitation, was like, yes, because that's who I heard singing it. And I didn't feel like it fitted me as what I wanted to do as an artist. So I was like, definitely give it to her. And that was kind of the breakthrough moment of my career, which led to all these other things.
My mouth is like on the floor. I'm really with you in this trip in America, kind of going to the studio. Unbelievable. And I guess really, I think it's very rare actually to meet these people who just, obviously you just have exceptional talent. Oh, exceptional. And do you feel that was something that, I mean, firstly, is it something that you knew really early on? And secondly, do you think that had your parents, because obviously, I mean, your dad sent off this tape and the demo and stuff, do you think if they hadn't kind of nurtured this gift that you had, the same thing would have happened?
Definitely, because I had a few friends around me at the time who were into like dancing and singing, and we were in stage here together, and some of their parents weren't as supportive and wanted them to get their education, wanted them to go to college, and kind of forced that direction, which I think led to, for some of my friends, you know, a lot of like, they always wonder what would have happened if they had have pursued their passion for dance or singing or acting. Whereas my parents, they weren't pushy at all. They took their lead from me. I never remember them being like, you have to write a song or you have to go to this. It was me going, can I go to this stage school? Can I go to this acting class? Can I listen to the song I just wrote? They just gave me all the tools. Like my dad gave me it was music all around my house. My mom and dad play in church and sing in church. And they, you know, so I grew up around sing songs were always what was happening in our house. You know, if there was ever a party, it was like sing song. If we went on holidays, we started the sing song and everywhere we went. So I was used to kind of singing for people and entertaining people and that being part of our family lifestyle of like performing and singing your songs and everything. But I felt like they were quite encouraging of like, they gave me a 2-track tape recorder and a microphone. And it was like, had it in my bedroom and I could write my songs. And then they would listen to all the songs and they would say, oh, that's amazing. Right. You know, you should write another one. That's great. Like very casually encouraging and nurturing this talent. They saw me starting to play the piano and teaching myself. So they then my mom was like, do you want piano lessons? Or like, it was very led by me, but very supported by them. And obviously when you're 17, it's a big decision to not go to college. So my mom had said to me, once you get your exams, then I'm fine. You can do whatever you want once you have that to fall back on. But I thought it was, they obviously had a lot of belief in me to like, I got into some music colleges, but you know, what's better than the actual experience of the music industry, my mom and dad felt. So they were like, okay, well, you're in safe hands with this manager and we know his family now. So they kind of really had this belief in me. So yeah, I think that without that belief, it would have been a lot. I think I inevitably would have ended up in music no matter what, because it's all I can really do. But I think they definitely helped me start younger, for sure.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. I absolutely love that. I find it really inspiring. And it's honestly like just such a great piece of parental advice, I feel like I just heard.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible. So what was then your second defining moment?
My second defining moment was probably making the move to LA, like actually moving to LA for 8 years. Because at the time before that, I was kind of coming back and forth to LA and to take the plunge and kind of move countries and, you know, go into that culture fully. I felt like I was on the cusp of really, I'd had some hits and then I had been in London for a while. And then I was like, you know what, I really need to take this plunge. And it was very scary. It's very scary moving countries and it's very unsettling. And anyone who's done it knows it's a nightmare with bank accounts and, you know, you've got no credit and you've got to build credit. You're kind of like this, you know, unknown person to the whole of the society. So it can really be a headache and you're moving away from family. And that was a huge deal for me because I'm very close to my family and Ireland, you know, Irish people were very grounded and were, you know, and it's hard to leave home, I think. And so taking the plunge and actually moving there was what I wanted to do to kind of get my career to the next level. And I wanted to learn from the best. I wanted to be around the best. I wanted to work with the best. And I felt like there was such a high pool of talent there that I could learn from and be mentored from and become better at what I did. So I really went to LA to really work on my craft and to live there. And living there was completely different, you know, than going back and forth to there. So I would say that probably was one of the defining moments where I kind of really then hit a stride and ended up, you know, having more success as a songwriter.
So when you say that it was different living there, what kind of things really for you were making those kind of that big difference?
I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with LA. I loved it for the work and I loved it for some of the people I met and some of the friends I made and some of the work success that I had. But it was very, very difficult on my mental health. There was a lot of misogyny I experienced there. And there was a lot of kind of feeling like you're just kind of surviving and trying to be successful and make, everyone's in LA to make something. You know, they're not, right. No one's really there, especially if you've come from Texas or Ireland or in it. You're not really there to just like chill. Everyone's hustling, everyone's networking, everything is a business exchange. It's very difficult to know who your real friends are, who aren't. Very easy to get pulled into the Hollywood glamour and the bad stuff. You have to be incredibly strong to not fall into that trap. And so I would say that it was an incredibly challenging time, but a time where I really grew up and experienced a lot of things, experienced things to make me know, okay, I don't like that, and or experience a lot of amazing things. So yeah, it was very defining for me as a woman because it was a lot of heartbreak. It was dating in LA. It was being around celebrity lifestyle and having success, not having success and then having a lot of success. So yeah, it was, and being poor there and then being, and then having success and making money there. So it was like everything you could experience in your 20s living in Hollywood.
I absolutely love this. And I think it's really interesting hearing you say, look, I experienced all these highs and lows. And I think people are always searching, you know, let's say if they don't have success, they're searching for the success, or if they don't have money and they're searching for money. And I think it's really interesting when you have experienced both sides of the coin.
Yeah.
And so for you, having experienced you know, maybe not having the success and then having it and having low points and, you know, in this kind of hustle nature, which can be really just so intense and damaging for our self-esteem. What do you think you then learned through all of that? Like, what was then your kind of philosophy on, let's say, sorry if this is like a bit of a big question, but what was then your philosophy on like what actually makes you happy? Because I, you know, I'm just fascinated. Yeah. You've done so much, like understanding your take on that.
Well, I think that ultimately realizing that, you know, you're around a lot of celebrities, you're around a lot of people who have money, and that doesn't equate to happiness. Seeing really the side of the other side of glamour, the other side of fame, the other side of all that. I was very close to all that. And it made me really realize that success isn't everything. I feel like I kind of grew up thinking, I really want to be successful in music. I really want, you know, and you just have your eyes set on this prize. And then when you get there, you realize how important it is to nurture your relationships. Relationships are so important. Your friendships, you know, making a family, finding someone that you love, like, and your family are important. And it really makes you kind of realize what actually is important, because when you achieve a lot of those things, I always used to say, you know, when I was living in LA and I was kept getting my heart broke and I was just around some toxic business environments and personal environments. Yeah. And I used to always say, like, success is nothing if it's at the expense of my mental health or at the expense of me not having anyone to share it with or to experience these high moments with, you know, because in LA there can be this mentality of like, you're only as good as your last hit, and you have to keep going and you have to keep hustling, and it can get very exhausting. And so for me, I kind of learned, like, you just have to learn like what fulfills you, what really is going to fulfill you. And for me, ultimately, that meant leaving LA and not living there, going back and forth to there to work. And I still, well, before the pandemic, I was still able to do that. But it kind of just shows you like what you really want in life and what really is your purpose and what will fulfill you. And nothing is worth your mental health or your physical health or your health in general. It's like very important to find what really makes you like the happiest. And I love making music, but I wouldn't say I love the music business. So it's best for me to not be in the hub of that. Best for me to be away. I can write songs from anywhere.
Oh, such a beautiful answer. I really, really loved that.
Oh, thanks.
And you know, you went when you were 17, and so I assume obviously all your friends were back in Ireland. And yeah. So how was making new friends at such a young age in a place like LA? Like, did you make like lifelong friends? Was it hard?
Yeah, I definitely would say it was tough to start with, because also in LA, it's, you know, it's 17, you can't go anywhere, you can't drive, you can't drink. You know, you're kind of limited on your social activities. So I really was only meeting like older writers and producers or artists that I was working with and stuff like that. So I would say it was harder in the earlier years. But once I had some independence with like being able to drive there, being able to go to bars and clubs and like different social events, it became a lot easier. And I did meet some oddly, like, well, not oddly, but most of the people I'm closest to that I've met there are actually not from there. It's people that I, like other English like girls that I met, or this Canadian girl, or like, so I have still to stay like a group of very close girlfriends. Even though I've moved back, we're still really close. So I definitely made some like amazing friendships. They're not in music though at all. And then I would say I made some amazing business relationships that I've kept, and I still write with those people and everything like that. So it definitely, you know, I definitely also met a lot of toxic people and had to navigate my way through that. But that's what your 20s is kind of all about, isn't it? So I did all that. So
wherever you are, it's going to be like that, 100%.
Yeah.
Welcome to Paranormal Activity with me, Yvette Fielding, a brand new podcast bringing together people's real ghost, extraterrestrial and paranormal stories, as well as getting some inside details from those who study the supernatural. I'll be listening through your paranormal stories every week and try to understand them, as well as chatting about my own encounters with an occasional paranormal investigator too. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts from, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Acast. Just search for Paranormal Activity with Yvette Fielding.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ruth, what was then your third defining moment?
I would say meeting my fiance and my baby daddy, who's my baby daddy and my fiance, Ollie, would say would be my, because, well, it's that, well, at this, I guess it defines, actually, yeah, it would be that, right? But it also happened around the time where I chose to leave LA. So it's kind of two moments into one. So yeah. I was in LA. I was getting really depressed. I was feeling uninspired, unmotivated. And I was pretty successful as a songwriter at the time. But I felt like there was one piece missing, and that was me being an artist. And I felt like I had stories to tell that weren't other artists couldn't tell. And so I decided to trial moving back to UK and Ireland, like UK and being closer to home. And it was during that time when I started doing everything that I only said yes to things that I really felt that I really wanted to do. I started making this album by accident that I didn't really mean to make. I just went over and I said, I'm going to write whatever I want to write. And it ended up being my debut album over a 3-week period. And I met my fiance like a few months later after my trial. I went to a gig and I sang a few of the songs for the first time as an artist I had performed in years. And I got such a good reaction. And my fiance happened to be there. He's best friends with a best friend of mine. And we'd never met, but we'd heard about each other. So that moment where I did that gig and I met him and I realized how much happier I was and fulfilled I was being an artist as well as being a songwriter and taking that leap into being an artist, because I had so many people that night come up to me and say, oh my God, like, where have you been? You know, because I'd been in LA, like, where, you know, you're an amazing artist. And I signed my record deal from that show and everything. So I feel like that whole night in 2017 was a bit of a very defining moment, because I met who's now my fiance and I transitioned into being an artist.
Oh, the universe was like completely aligned with you. Yeah. Because you were in your flow, in your purpose, and you were in alignment doing what you really love, and then the universe gifted you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, that was a big defining moment for sure.
Oh, that is so sweet. Yeah, because, you know, I wanted to ask, I mean, I think obviously when you were a performer and then you were writing all these songs for so many people. And how was that kind of experience for you? Did you notice, did you feel at the time, like obviously you obviously came to the realization, as you just said, but did you feel it in that interim where you, did you feel like something was missing always?
Yeah.
Was it hard sometimes seeing your songs being sung by other people?
That wasn't the hard part, because that was incredibly exciting and fulfilling and still is. It's very hard to explain. It's like playing two roles. So
right.
The role of the artist is everyone laughs at your jokes. You're the star of the show. People go get you water. People are, you're kind of like the leading lady in a movie, right? Mm-hmm. And the songwriter is kind of the supporting actress, right? The support. And the songwriter can sometimes be treated a little bit like the ugly best friend, I would say.
Right.
Depending on who you're with, depending on who you're working with. But a lot of the time, the songwriter is very disposable to labels, to record labels. We're not very paid very well sometimes. You know, there's a lot of things about being a songwriter that's very challenging. And you're rejected a lot of the time. Your songs are rejected. You're constantly trying to get that hit, right? And I feel like sometimes a lot of people, how do I say this without sounding like a weirdo? I'm a lot more comfortable in the role of, I wouldn't say being famous or anything like that, but I'm an entertainer at heart. I'm a performer at heart. I love to make people feel something. I love to connect. I love to tell jokes. So I'm very much more comfortable in a role where I'm seen and heard, I guess, not in a famous way, but in the way of, like, you know, I'm Irish, we love to tell stories, we love to be the life and soul of the party, we love to dance all night, like very extroverted and very people person, and I would sing for anybody, you know. And I felt like as a songwriter sometimes I had to dim my shine, because artists can get very, you know, I had to sing, if you sing too good then they get insecure. It's all about everybody laughing at their jokes, making them feel comfortable, you know, they're the best singer in the room, everything like that. And some artists love when they work with the singer and they don't get insecure, like Kelly Clarkson or Jennifer Hudson. I've worked with them and they're like, girl, sing. But there are some artists that then are like, oh, I can't sing it as good as Ruth. Like, I don't want to be here now. And I've had some of those. So you find yourself having to dull your shine. You can't really tell very funny jokes. No one really wants to hear about your day or your life. It's all about placating to the artist. Sometimes food wasn't even ordered for the songwriter in the room. It's like everything's for the artist. And I get that, of course, but I guess that's a long-winded answer. And I don't know if I've explained it very well, but
what
it's juggling between being the lead actress and the supporting ugly best friend, which is what a lot of people have named songwriters. And so that sometimes could be quite challenging for me in the rooms. But actually having artists sing my songs is incredible, and I love that. That's an unreal feeling, because in a way it's amazing to be somewhere, to be at a Britney show in Vegas and people wearing the merchandise of the song that you wrote and nobody knows you did it, or being in the gym and hearing the B.B. Garrix and Martin Garrix song, or someone singing Too Little Too Late from their car and no one knows you wrote it. Like, that's, I love that too. And I don't know if I'm really built to be famous. But I think that once I started being an artist, there was a happiness that I had missed for so long, just being fulfilled in getting to be the role that I felt I was most comfortable in. Doing interviews is comfortable for me. Performing on stage is where I am most at home. And so I realized, wow, this is something that I have to do, whether it's for two people, 2,000 or 20,000. I don't really have I have to be the biggest artist in the world kind of thing. I just know that it's a part of me as an creative that I have to do as part of me being fulfilled. And I'll do it for whoever's listening.
Oh, incredible. I mean, I think it makes, I love what you've said about, you know, and I think it makes sense. I can imagine just hearing something you've written just knowing that in yourself as well. Like, you just, so cool. But I think what you describe of kind of, because what you said was like, you know, it's like being the supporting actress, but those experiences of being in the room and being kind of like dulled or muted, that is not being a supporting actress. That's being just, I just think that's so disrespectful. I'm like, nah, not for me.
But people people don't mean to do it. They don't even notice they're doing it.
No.
And to be fair to artists, they are in a world where things are all about them. So they don't think, by the way, I've worked with some artists that are totally very down to earth and ask me, how are you? But there's lots of artists where you're just interviewing them the whole time and they don't know how to, there's no back and forth on a conversation. And that's not always their fault. That's people around them. I remember I watched an interview with Billie Eilish and she was like, I had to learn to like have conversations with people because you're so used to everybody just asking you things and wanting to know about you that you have to be like, wait a sec, how are you? You know, and that can be challenging sometimes. But yeah, it's I've had some experiences that have been really not very even humane the way you're treated. But I've also had unreal experiences with artists that I love to death who are so nice to me and so good to me. So yeah.
Yeah. Every situation is unique in its own way, I guess. Yeah. But I'm so happy that now, you know, you are living your truth and doing both. Are you still doing both?
Yeah.
Incredible.
I could never not do both because I'm kind of creatively greedy. I love too many genres and I have a certain genre that I, you know, love as an art that I am as an artist, but then I also love making dance music. I love making, like, I just did a song that Diana Ross is releasing soon, and so like I love being a part of all these different artists' stories and history, music history. So I'll always do both. I think that I've just finally found the balance of how to do both.
Oh, it's really, I feel it's a very beautiful story to hear.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your incredible talent with the world in both ways.
Thank you.
I'm so happy for you in this new journey and as you become a mother, which is a whole other journey. But before you go, I do have some quick fire questions for you.
Yeah.
So the first one is your most memorable book.
Definitely How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. That book.
Really? I haven't read that.
Oh my God. So I only read it when I was, I only read it a few years ago. It should be in every school for every teenager. It should be on the curriculum for every school. It is unbelievable because it teaches you how to deal with conflict. It teaches you how to deal with people because managing people and managing relationships, right, is one of the most crucial things in business, in personal life. And you hear those stories where people ignore each other for years. Like, this book gives you all the tools to really be able to, you know, nurture every relationship in your life, in business as well. Get what you want without pushing people away or, you know, it's just such an incredible, incredible book. I've read it like 3 times and I've taken notes each time.
Sold. I'm sold.
Yeah.
Your favorite quote?
My favorite quote I have two, but I've them both tattooed on me. So I have, one is when I was 15, I said to my mom, you know, I want to go, like I haven't been discovered yet. I was like, freaking out that, you know, I'm never going to make it. If you make me stay in school, I want to go, like, let me, you know. And my mom gave me this book. She had said, once you get your education, you can go wherever you want. And she gave me this book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, because
favorite book ever.
Yeah. So as much as I wanted to go, I would always also have these moments of fear. And my mom noticed that. So she gave me this book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. It's one of my favorite books. And I got it tattooed on the back of my neck when I first went to LA. It was like, in order to remind me to move there and take the plunge, I got that tattoo. And then I have another one, Make Good Art, which is on my arm, on my arm that I've tattooed. And that's basically from this Neil Gaiman speech where he said, when you're poor, make good art. When you're rich, make good art. Sorry, my dog's just starting to bark. I'll say that. Go on, you go out. When you're rich, make good art. When you're poor, make good art. No matter what happens in your life, always bring it back to making the best art that you can. So those are my two favorite quotes.
Love that. Your go-to feel-good film?
My go-to good feel-good film is, there's two, Love Actually and The Holiday are like my favorites.
The best. a moment where you felt most proud?
I would say being Grammy nominated was definitely one of them, because that's something I always wanted to be. And also having my own artist song, my first single, The Vow, it's been used in so many people's weddings across the globe. And every video that I get, I'm so proud that it would be part of such a big moment for people in their lives. So yeah, that's probably one as well.
Your top tip for dealing with stress?
Stepping away, doing something for yourself, like having a bath, a meditation, a massage, a walk by the sea or in a park. I listen to music. But the main thing I do to try and deal with my stress is to accept that I can't control everything, and that some of these things are out of my control. They're happening for a reason. And so I just try and lean into accepting that it is what it is, but that I do have choices. And I think with stress, it's all about making choices to eliminate the stress in your life.
Love that. I'm interested to know your answer to this. A song that cheers you up.
Oh, it's so hard to pick songs because I have
so many. I thought of it.
But recently, Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears. Just the minute I hear that music, it just like, I just get into this vibe and zone, and it just always makes me feel good. So definitely that.
One thing you'd like to achieve in the next year?
I'd love to be a good mom and to learn and be able to still have a healthy work-life balance whilst being a mom, I think.
Beautiful, beautiful. And the last question is, who is the first person you called to share good news?
My fiance, Ollie, and my mum and my dad definitely are the first three.
The team. Ruth, thank you so, so much for being such
an
amazing.
Thank you.
I really love chatting to you.
Thank you so much. It's been so lovely to chat.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.